Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender this Saturday. And I have to say, it's a bit of a chilly one, but it looks like it's going to be a great day for the Edinburgh Tattoo. Just before we start our first segment, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland Central Business District. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, we are going to start off this rugby segment next with AJ. Just before we started off, condolences to Angus Tarvale and his family on the loss of his son Leo. I know the Tarvale family pretty well, and I know that I know Angus is hurting, but he put a lot of his career was focused in New Zealand, and it was for Leo. And I know that whatever's happening to you and your partner and Georgie and to the family, Stuart, who's a dear friend, who I consider one of my good mates, just condolences from the Sports Weekender. Anyway, here we have former All Black AJ Wetton. G'day, AJ.
Yeah, good morning. Good to be back on the show. And yeah, just pass on, I think everyone that knows Angus around the rugby fraternity and his family, our condolences and thing for him and his fun out.
Yep. Thank you, AJ. Anyway, we've got a big weekend of our Super Rugby coming up. And after the first week's been over and done with, and I'll be straight to the point. I'm beginning to think, when is the Super coming into Super Rugby? But we've only had the first round. We're already criticising it. But but last night, Moana Pacifica made a number of changes. The Hurricanes started. Hurricanes 52, Moana Pacifica 10. Geordie Barrett, he was just on form. He was just, his passing game, his kicking game was brilliant. Obviously the Morby hat trick, really impressed with Callan Harkham, and also Braden Ossie. I thought he was outstanding. For Moana, Faletau Pene, I thought he, who many people in the 09 would know, played a number of years for Manukau and played for Ponsonby before moving to Southland. He has probably had a really good game for Moana, but there's just a difference in class there. There's a big gap there, AJ.
Yeah, well, it comes down to your squad and experience. And when we saw the multiple changes for the match against the Hurricanes, we knew then that it was going to be one-way traffic. Hey, look, they scored the first try, and we thought, oh, hello. But as you mentioned, the strength and the combination and the experience came through. Certainly, I thought Barrett had a very solid game, and that trip away last year certainly made him seem right back on song. So it's good to see him there. Some good people back. Morby, you mentioned there. Tries going everywhere, especially on the other wing as well as playing Ganola. So that looked good too. Yes, he scored. He got a couple more. But they were just one way traffic. Too big, too strong up front. And they paid the price, and 50-odd points. It was what you call a good old thrashing, Peggy.
Yeah, and I think it was a good old thrashing. Obviously, some concerns. Brent Cameron's down here, so that probably, it's looking like it could be at this stage a long term injury for Brent Cameron. Hamish Mackay, I know you've got your tissues out because he's the number one supporter of the Brent Cameron fan club, but sad for the Hurricanes. Obviously Ruben loves that, so someone has to step into that reach. But for Moana, I think last year when you had Artie there, there was that. They never really got beaten by big scores, but, it could be tough for them. Obviously, they got the Force next week, but, we'll see how it goes. But then we went to Australia, and I'll tell you what, I was looking at these Australian games, and Fiji and Giroux, for the first 20 minutes, looked fantastic, but the Waratahs got through in the end, AJ. 36 points to 13. Max Jorgensen, this guy is class. He is absolutely class. But the guy, Ione, who came on as hooker, now he was with the Crusaders last year. He's taken the opportunity to play a Super Rugby in Australia, and I think he's a real asset to that Waratah side.
Yeah, I think the obviously the two wins for the Tars, they'll be delighted. And, you know, we know Jorgensen well. They paid a lot of money for him, so you'd expect someone showing that quality. I thought, yeah, they played really well a couple of times, a bit of ill discipline in losing the ball hot on attack. We knew Fiji Drua would put up a more sterner test after their disappointment not winning at home in Latota last week. That could come back and hurt them big time. But I thought the Yalouche forward, Tahalo, Samu, they played very well. Took the ball up hard. But as I said, just too well-rounded in a tight five and just too dominant. But Fiji at times, once again, exciting. I thought Lemani at number 9 read it pretty well at times. His distribution, Waikuru out wide, showed some pace. Longaramasi, but just not enough ball, not enough consistent good ball for them to really challenge, especially in that second half. It was close at half time. They're in with a shout, but they just wore them down in the second half. And as I said, that physical presence with their tight five just gave them too much ball and a couple of forward tries, and it was all over.
Absolutely, and of course now we've got a big weekend coming up. We started off Highlanders versus Chiefs. Now, obviously some changes, some small changes, but for this, Jamie Joseph has got some, you know, I know why he's been touted as the next All Black coach, but that's still, there's a lot to go under the bridge yet. I look at the Highlanders side and look at the Chiefs side. I think this is a real, like, the favourites will be the Chiefs. You know, you look at the side they've got on paper, they can produce. You know, when you have guys like Carter, Nana Sakura, Quintipai, who I felt was outstanding. Then you look at the loose forwards, this guy Brown, Boshier, Jacobson, Big Tupu and Vi and Josh Lord, and you've got that experience in the front row. But there's something about this Highlanders side that, you know, you actually want to cheer for them. Now, I'm hoping Lee Piper's not listening because he will be giving me stick. But I just think the way they play with passion, they play with how sides should play. They may not have the class of other oppositions. And I look at it, I'm looking forward to see how Whiteley and Casey go in that loose forward battle. I love their back three at the Highlands, especially Caleb Tangatau. And, of course, that man we all love, Tava Nainai.
Yeah, incredible. He's captaining the side too, so not easy to do out there at second 5'8", but boy, is he a menace. And we know how strong he is on ball, on the ground, in regards to the ruck. So he had a mighty game last week and led from the front. So yeah, don't underestimate them. Down there, Jamie Joseph, old school, has certainly got them going as a nucleus, as a team. Fakatava Miller, obviously, a huge responsibility from them. It just depends on the amount of ball and quality ball. You mentioned the loose forwards. They've got some good second rowers, Hagen Dunshear. But it's pretty even right across the both teams. Josh Lord and Vi, obviously class players from the Chiefs. They've got Jacobson captaining. That'll be a good battle. There with the two number eights. You mentioned the loose forwards there. But Xavier Rowe, thought played pretty well when he... Last week against the Blues with Jacob, we know that Josh is a very complete player, can only get better and better in the back line. Well, you mentioned it, Nanai Satoru, Carter, he's coming on the left wing there, Rona and Tupaya. So it's going to be the best game of the round. And not easy down there in Highlanders country. They've tasted success in week one. They'll have a good crowd, loyal crowd right in your face. And I'm picking the Chiefs just on their experience to get through. But my word, they're going to have to work hard for it. So it wouldn't surprise me if it goes the other way, but you've got to back someone, and I'll pick the Chiefs.
Absolutely. Then we go to Perth, and it's the Western Force versus the Blues. Now, to be honest with you, that game was extremely disappointing for Blues fans. In fact, as a spectacle, it wasn't the greatest spectacle of all, but Vern Conner really... Well, this... as a, you know, everyone says we're only early rounds, but the Blues need to win games like these away on the road against the Western Force. And they're not going to be easy, AJ. You know, we picked them to beat the Brumbies last week, but they didn't. But this one is crucial, and I think the Blues really need it to, you know, just to get a bit of momentum going for them.
Well, they should have dealt with Enton centre back there, so he'll certainly give them some solidity, some leadership. With Satutu and Papali'i, it's a pretty good back row there. But you're right, we picked the Force. I picked the Force due to their pre-season, but they got touched up big time by the Brumbies. Just goes to show you Larkham, he's a wily old character. So they'll be hurting. Picking the Blues to bounce back big time too, after not winning at Eden Park, as we've mentioned, you've got to win your home game. So this is big for them and their progress up the table. They have to get one out of two. So being desperate, I'm saying the Blues, from my point of view, will come through. I think a pair of feet are just finding his way again back into the season after an injury last year. Hopefully he'll get more and more confident. I see they've got Renata in the front row there with Fisitua and Slater. Zahn Sullivan, of course, at fullback can create all sorts of problems. But they've just got to get him some good ball. Clark, we know, was dangerous with ball in hand. He's a powerful winger. So I just think they'll have the edge over them. I know the Force are good at home there. Donaldson at 10 will try and lead the cutter. But I don't know if they'll get enough ball to really put the Blues under a lot of pressure for the match. So I'm looking for a big turnaround from the Blues, a must-win game, and I'd like to see that result on the scoreboard indicating a good, solid win away.
And then we finish up the weekend on Sunday. It is the Crusaders versus the Brumbies, and I'm looking at this game, and I think, well, good win by the Brumbies away. Crusaders, I've got no doubt, Rob Penny gave him a right good kick up the backside after last week's performance, drop balls and miscommunications, but this is a game. Will Jordan's back at fullback. I saw him last week. He was fantastic. And it's probably they'll be saying goodbye very soon to that beautiful stadium out in Addington. But I look at this. This is one the Crusaders have to win, and I think they will win.
Yeah, just like with the Blues, you know, that one they let slip away. So certainly I think that Rob Penny's made a change there with Jordan. And we saw his class when he did come on, and probably rude not starting him. But anyway, back to the combinations there. Midfield, Havili, Rana. They've been around a while. Just really got to show their wares at home. I know the Brumbies, probably a bit of motion there for Slipper, playing his 200th Super Rugby match. Can you believe it? 200th. I thought he was a pensioner, but he's still going.
He won't be getting a free trip like yourself on the Waiheke Ferry.
No, I know, but they may do one if they lose this one here, but congratulations to him. He's obviously been a huge stalwart for Super Rugby. But at home, loose forwards, Blackadder again leading the way there. I see Fletcher Newell's come into the front row with Al and Brewis, so they just need to get some consistent ball there with the combination with Hotham and Rahana. Lead the forwards around the pack, put some scoring chances in. You've got Fihaki, Reese and Jordan. If they don't see enough pill, well, really, they're going to get a rocket up the bum. So certainly looking for a big turnaround. Must win at home for the Crusaders. So backing them by about 12, 13 points.
Absolutely. So plans here. Obviously, you've got some plans for the weekend, young AJ.
Yeah, a bit of a wedding today. My nephew's getting married, so we're going to be going out.
Is that Gary's son, is it?
Yeah, Louis to Madeleine, so that'll be great. We're looking forward to going out there. And I just hear a little story that you were out at the Edinburgh Military Tattoo and just standing there on the ground and someone mistook you for one of those big drums. So apologies if I know you'd be hurting with that and they put you down very quickly, but
Do you know what? We went through the show, there were hardly any insults, and I thought, hang on, something's not right. He's obviously not feeling well. He's usually a bit hungover. I was thinking, no, he must be a bit hungover today, and then damn it, he's back to normal, the insults.
Yeah, you get out of the military tattoos, mate. You just stay away from there.
Well, mate, I can tell you something right now. I think it's fantastic for Eden Park. They've probably got more than they did to the Blues other week.
Yeah, everything about 20,000, 25,000.
Yeah.
There. So just, I mean,
I suppose you were at the Barbarians having a free look, were you?
Well, I was invited to one of the boxes. It's someone that's called Friends, Biggie, and I know you don't have many, but I'll stick with you through thick and thin, buddy. Don't you worry about it.
Well, I don't want to make a joke, but it's a thing that somebody mentioned to me. It's the only time we've seen the Scottish buy stuff. Is that the festival?
Be careful. We've got a lot of Scottish fans out there. Fenton Little and her group of fans.
Oh, hello, Fenton. How are you?
I think Barley might be listening too. He's an accountant, so we call him a Scotty.
Well, we call Barlow a lot of things, but some we can't even say on radio. On that note, Mr. Wetton, you have a wonderful day. Enjoy the wedding. Behave yourself. Obviously, get a dialer driver home or something.
Mr. Uber.
Yep. Anyway, have a good weekend, AJ. Cheers, mate. Bye. AJ Wetton, that was AJ. And of course, AJ being AJ, very much on form and on point, and I felt something was wrong. He's not giving me a bit of stick, but he's always back to giving me stick. Okay, I'm just going to get to an interview I conducted with Alan Quinlan this morning, who is a former Irish international, as we look at the Six Nations now. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Force Electrical. Just a little bit about Force Electrical. It was started in 2014 by my good mate Nick Brakovich, and I can tell you what it has done since 2014. It's really grown into a trusted name across the Auckland and Northland region. Why you should choose them, and this is the reason you should choose them: their reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of all industry standards and technologies. What they do? Well, they can do anything from residential and commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage, ELV solutions. So, if you're looking for some electrical work, give Force Electrical a call. The number is 021-628-341. And you can email Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. And just on a personal note, I know Brax and the Eden family lost a dear friend and a dear mate. So, you know, thinking about you, Brax, I know at times to time when I don't put the full phone number on air, I get a rather taut message, just take care there, Brax. Anyway, we're going to play this interview, so just give us a second. Okay, we get to this interview once I can get the technology. And I haven't said a swear word, which is great. Here we go. We'll do it right now. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. And we're talking Six Nations rugby, and here to talk to us, as he did last week, this segment was very popular for a lot of our listeners, former Irish international commentator Alan Quinlan. Good morning, Alan. How are you? I mean, good evening to you.
I'm very good, Eamon. Yeah, I'm very good, Eamon, and yourself?
Oh, not bad. I've just been watching some of our Super Rugby, and I have to say, after watching last week, some of the New Zealand game, it wasn't super at all, to be honest with you, but hey, that's early season blues. Anyway, we might as well rip into it. Obviously, last week, a number of games. Obviously, the big news from last week would have been Scotland beating England, which really probably surprised a lot of people, but then the Ireland struggled against Italy. France do what France had been doing in Six Nations for the last few years, dominating. Now we come to round three, and the first game to kick off this week's Six Nations game, and I think this one is a real crucial one. It's England versus Ireland. Pressure
and probably a different kind of pressure, probably real pressure on Andy Farrell at the moment.
Yeah, there is, Eamon. They haven't, you know, we spoke about it last week. I think the hope was that they'd get a clinical performance against Italy and get a bit of a feel-good factor back in the team. They had some really good moments in the game. First 20 minutes, they dominated, but credit to Italy, and I think they probably backed up that performance against Scotland the week before in dreadful conditions and played really well. They were outstanding, and most people would think that they possibly deserved a draw out of the game. You know, they had a try ruled out by Lina as well, and the Irish fans weren't happy campers leaving. They were pleased with to get the result and get the win, but there is a fair bit of pressure on Andy Farrell. Yeah, he knows it too. I think he's gone back to, he's made five changes for the game against England tomorrow, and he's gone back to somebody he's tried and trusted. The big debate here, and it's been going on for probably 12-14 months now, is the old half situation. You know, Sam Prendergast is out at the 23, Jack Crowley starts, Josh van der Fleer has been back in the back row, Tadhg Furlong is back at tight head starting. And there was some big issues in that Italian game, particularly the scrum. I think we'd never seen Tadhg Furlong go backwards or go up in the air, if you like he did. So, yeah, it was, they showed a lot of character to get the results, but Ireland are in a tricky place at the moment, and they'll need a big performance to get anything in London tomorrow.
Yeah, because when I look at it, like, it's probably hard to say here, like, within New Zealand, we're still trying to find an All Blacks coach, and there's a lot more to the story that goes on. But I think for the first time we've ever seen is Andy Farrell is under real pressure. There are questions being asked on his selection, on his coaching group. Like, Andy Farrell, he took it over from Joe Smith. He took it to another level, and he's had some magnificent results, but surely the pressure now comes in. Could you potentially see, obviously, they're not going to get rid of a coach before a World Cup. It would be absolute stupidity. Hold on, we're in New Zealand, so I've got to be careful what I say, but could you see some people coming into that? Different people coming into that coaching group, because it's a tight.
Yeah, space. I don't know. I think there's pressure on. There's definitely pressure on the group. I don't think there's pressure on Andy Farrell. He's probably got a bit frustrated at times in November with some of the questions, and the team is older. There's a lot of familiar faces there. There, you know, there was 17 or 18 Irish players on a Lions tour historically. That it's proven to be the case that. The year after a Lions tour, it takes a while for players to get back up to speed. So we're hoping that they will find some form and turn a corner. But yeah, I think Ireland's the big difference with Ireland is their attack. And I go back to, again, the New Zealand listeners won't like this, but when Ireland won that series a couple of years back, it's 3-4 years now. Jesus, it's hard to believe it's that long, but their attacking game was sublime. They won a Grand Slam in 23 as well. You know, obviously New Zealand knocked them out in the World Cup, so plenty of your listeners will probably send your messages in just to remind me of that. But I think for a period of 2-3 years, their attack was outstanding, and it wasn't that they had any sort of X-factor players who were doing individual brilliance. I just think collectively they were so cohesive, they looked so well coached, and now they have problems in you know, set piece and that attack, and it's very apparent. But the hope is that, you know, they can turn the corner, and you know yourself, it's one big result can get you back on track. We'd love to bring in some, and I'm sure Andy Farrell would love to bring in some young, fresh players, but they're not busting his door down with form, and you know, so it's obviously a slower process for four teams to choose from here, and but still there's a lot of good players in that Irish team, and they'll need to really perform well tomorrow. So, yeah, going back to your question, of course there's a bit of pressure on him, but not to the point of that. I think his job is under pressure.
He
has to probably look at things a little bit differently. Maybe some of the assistant coaches, maybe we'll see someone come in if the Six Nations ends disappointingly. Who knows? But the they're certainly not at the level of. And look, it doesn't help any team when you're chopping and changing your number 10. One week it's Crowley, next week it's Prendergast. I think both players, their confidence has dipped a lot. And you know, out half or fly half is an integral part of any team. It controls the tempo, the pace, you know, controls everything really. But yeah, so they need to find something special, because their form going into this game would not indicate them going and getting a really good performance, which they'll have to if they've any chance of winning, because I think England will bounce back.
Oh yeah,
they were very disappointing after last week. Scotland caught them on the edges. Their attack game was brilliant, and they punished England. And I think they will, you know, Steve Borthwick will be looking for a bounce back from them.
Absolutely. And then we go to Wales versus Scotland. Now, Scotland were absolutely outstanding. Their attack game, you're right, Alan, was superb. I believe they potentially got the best out of the home unions, probably the best back line there in the home unions. But to me, I think Gregor Townsend will probably be kicking himself after that Italy result. But then we look at Wales. What can Wales, and this is the reality of it, Wales are struggling. I've got to be careful, I've got a lot of Welsh friends, but what can they get out of the game? Because Scotland come in as ultimate favourites in this.
I think the only kind of chunk of light that they have is that, you know, they're not meeting a powerhouse pack of forwards. I think they're very athletic and mobile, the Scots, and that's probably been their downfall over the years, their inconsistency. And a lot of the time it goes back to, you know, forward dominance. They have a brilliant back line. Finn Russell is playing outstanding. Tuba Blotto, Hugh Jones in the centre, they're outstanding players. And you know, at times Scotland's forwards have let them down, and they've been very inconsistent. And I think, you know, he hasn't any hair left, Gregor Townsend, but if he had any, he'd have it all pulled out now. But yeah, they're a very dangerous side. And I think, you know, we're probably forgetting one thing here. Italy have improved dramatically, and
yes,
they're strong. Their defensive game is improved. They don't give up soft scores. There's some really top class players, loose forwards. Menicello in the centre is world class. So yeah, they caught Scotland in the rain, and they defended like their lives depended on it. So it's going to make it an interesting championship. France are probably the team now that can, you know,
well, yeah,
unsurprisingly will kick on and probably win a Grand Slam. But yeah, Scotland, I think it's a big test for them, in a sense of, can they back up a big performance again? And it's happened so much with Scotland over the years. They get a big performance and then they're poor the following week. But, you know, Wales are so low on confidence. I wouldn't see anything but a pretty dominant Scottish win tomorrow.
And then we move on to France versus Italy. France are the Six Nations champions in waiting. But Italy, to me, I think they've proven a surprise, and it also shows one thing. This Italian team has developed over the last few years. I believe they're on the rise.
Yeah, they are. I think, you know, a number of their players last week, you know, were outstanding, you know, to the point that, you know, I was doing player of the game, and there was three or four of them that were, you know, I wouldn't say it surprised me, but, you know, their number seven, Zuliani, outstanding open side. Canone at the number eight, his brother in the second row. Fischetti at the loose head, you know, putting massive pressure on that Irish scrum. So many of their players, you know, Monty Ioane on the wing and Lyon on the other wing, they've quality right across the board, I think, and Gonzalo Quezada has done a great job with them. The problem they have is going to Paris, and when France are in the mood, and they look like they're in the mood in the Six Nations. You know, 2 years ago Italy got a draw, it was 13-all there. I do think Italy can cause France some problems, but France are just at a different level at the moment. I think they're full of energy, quality. Their attack game is sublime, and you know, Intermac is not playing, but they have the quality of Jalibert. He's playing outstandingly well, and of course, Dubois inside him. So, you'd expect that France will get a pretty dominant win there. But who knows? The Six Nations is throwing up a few surprises, and I think everybody hopes that Italy will. You know, every time they play, if you're a neutral, you want to see Italy do well. So hopefully they can do well in Paris.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for the simple fact is I think out of the two games which France has had, I think Italy might prove the tougher of them, because I just feel that there is a bit of quality coming out of Italian rugby. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Anyway, Alan, I must thank you for making yourself available, and obviously you've probably got a big weekend ahead with commentary duties and analysis.
Okay, pleasure, my pleasure, and I promise I won't mention that series win again, because I did last year. I'm not going to mention anything. Our tails are kind of between our legs at the moment here in Ireland, and we're hopeful for tomorrow, but it's a long shot.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Alan.
And that was Alan Quinlan talking about Six Nations rugby. Fantastic analyst of the game is Alan Quinlan. And you know what? Six Nations has proven to be quite a competition. Anyway, the man with the fuzzy hair on Monday at Eden Park announced that State of Origin 2 will be coming to Auckland, Tamaki, Makaurau, match two, and I think it's going to be a fantastic event for Auckland, and it's going to bring a lot of money into the economy. Now, I was trying to get people to talk about it. It was just by chance I got hold of Sir Graham Lowe, old Lowey, and he knows a little bit about State of Origin, being a former State of Origin coach. So I'll get to this interview with Lowey right now.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Well, big announcement on Monday, the announcement we've been expecting. State of Origin game number 2 is coming to Auckland, to Eden Park, and I can tell you something, I think this event is going to be huge for the city. I look at it and I'm just, everyone, it's been the big talking point around water coolers, at bars, wherever you go, people are talking about it. And here to talk to us, well, he knows a little bit about it because he's coached Queensland to a successful State of Origin, the one and only Sir Graham Lowe. G'day, Lowey, how are you?
I'm really good, mate. How are you?
Oh, listen, mate. Excellent, excellent. I'm just looking at this announcement, Graham. This has, Sir Graham, this really, I heard rumours murmuring in October, and then everyone was saying, no, they won't bring it here. But just to hear that news, you know, I think it's great. It's great for the city. It's actually really good for New Zealand Rugby League.
Well, I think it's outstanding for Auckland City, and Brownie, you know, our mayor up here, I think he's done an outstanding job. He can be a bit grumpy at times to some people, but he's done an absolute outstanding job with this. And you know, I know many people, most people in fact, have probably seen State of Origin on television, but they've got no idea what they're in for with this. Once it comes to Eden Park, it will be something that's never seen, an excitement that this Eden Park ground has never seen before, and it's had some massive events since it was first made into Eden Park.
Yeah.
This will be at least as good as anything that's ever been delivered there.
And I think the main thing is that this has been bandied around for years, and if now it's going to happen, and when we look at the city, and we'll say it right now, the infrastructure should be right by that time, come June, July and 2027, so you'll have trains coming from downtown. Obviously the big thing will be, I think it can be such a fun event where you'll have fan zones. You'll probably have people at work. One will be supporting the good guys in New South Wales. Got to be careful here when I say that in front of you, Lowey. And of course, Queensland. I just look at it and I just feel it's good for the game in New Zealand, because you know, obviously there is still a 30th team to come out of in the NRL, and we're hoping that it is within New Zealand. So it's great indication, especially last week on that good crowd we saw in Hamilton for the All-Star game.
Yeah, well, it's it's got a lot. It's got there's a lot of things this is going to push forward, because it's going to deliver sport and excitement to an excitement level that I don't think the country's seen before. I know this is a rugby union nation, and that's the national sport. I'm not being disrespectful to that at all, but this is something different altogether. State of Origin is something different. It brings out something very, very special, not only in the players, but in everyone. And like you say, that competitiveness and the tribalism, there'll be some supporting New South Wales, some supporting Queensland. Those that are supporting New South Wales, I would advise them to go and get their as many boxes of tissues as they can get now, because they're going to need them. They're going to need them after the game.
Oh, I don't know. I'll be calling you. I'll be texting you after that game, because and the reason was I changed because a lot of people that were Queensland supporters, and it was because they were kind of like Australia versus New Zealand, the underdog, and then they had a Kiwi bloke called Graham Lowe, and I believe when you were coaching State of Origin, I think it just turns New Zealanders into maniacs around it.
Yeah, maybe so, but I think that I actually believe that Eden Park, the second game that we're going to see next year at Eden Park, can turn that ground into another home ground for Queensland, because, you know, Queensland has still got massive support here in Auckland, and you know, once it gets closer and the tribalism really kicks in with everyone, and people start to really look into and understand the history of Origin and what it actually means and how it all came about and things like that, I think Queensland will really grow into an unstoppable force here in Auckland. It'll be fantastic.
I think it'd be great, and obviously there will obviously be some select. They'll obviously have, we'll have an allotment for New Zealand fans, and we'll have an allotment for Queensland and New South Wales fans. And you know what? I love it when the Aussies come to town for any sporting occasion. You know, while we've got this rivalries, we're pretty much similar the way we are. The way we are, but when we play cricket, we don't bowl underarm. But when we look at it, I just think it's great for the economy. And I think one of the things I believe it brings out the best in, I think it brings out the best in passion.
It does. It's healthy. It's healthy, you know, like you've explained, you know, we like competing against Australia, but we're very similar in some ways. But one of the things the Australians can teach us about, I think, is we sometimes get a little bit too precious with ourselves. They've got a bit of a couldn't care less attitude with a lot of things. But, you know, we are very, very similar in many ways. But I think they've done us a massive favour in bringing allowing the Origin to be played over here, because it's the State of Origin will grow another leg altogether. You know, it's hard to explain. I can't explain it just in a few minutes. Really, it just brings out something different in you. I know when I was the coach of Queensland, and it was a long time ago, back in 91 and 92, I thought I was a reasonably experienced coach, because I'd coaching Manly in Sydney at the time. I'd already coached New Zealand, and I'd coached Wigan, so I was reasonably experienced, I suppose, and I thought I knew how far I would go, how far I'd push myself and how far I'd push my players, and it wasn't until, you know, I was heavily, you know, right in the centre of the camp, I realised it took me personally to another level altogether. It was just unbelievable.
Absolutely, and when you look at it, it's just, you know, you look at the, remember when we spoke about this, it would have been last year, about the history and, you know, some of your great stories. But looking at it, and it may be a very much changed Origin series, because it looks as while we have Queensland and New South Wales are allowing players to play for their states that are born there, but also play for their country of origin. And it seems as though the rules will bring in possibly Kiwi players and possibly English players that are born in Australia.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. At the end of the day, it's about the selectors, you know, whether who they see and who they feel is needed at the time. And it's just as simple as that. New South Wales versus Queensland has always in the past been part of a stepping stone to get into the Australian team. And I think everybody's got to keep that in mind. We'd like to see Kiwi players in there, but it's an Australian thing. So
we'll just
wait and see what the Queensland and New South Wales selectors do at the time. They'll pick whoever they think's going to do the best for their side. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I know this has been pushed, and you know my feelings on it, Lowy, is that it is an Australian, series, and you know I think by bringing in Kiwis and English that are born in Australia or may have that connection, I think it, you know, no offence to some of those good Kiwi players like the Casey McLeans, who would probably make a state of origin, Braden Nakora, who would make a state of origin, but it's their competition. It turns it into an all-star game, which it's not about.
No, it's not about that. It's about state against state, mate against mate.
Absolutely.
That simple phrase really describes what origin's all about, so we've got to keep that in mind at all stages.
Absolutely. I did hear what Jerome Dew said on a podcast, and they said, would you, and he said the most precious jersey for him, and it's always good when you hear this, and I know you'd get a kick out of this, is the Kiwi jersey for him.
Yeah, well, I think it's fantastic that Jerome's come out and said that as well, because the pinnacle for Kiwi players is playing Test football for New Zealand. That is the pinnacle. That's what we've got. In Australia, it's many debate whether it's playing for Australia or playing for Queensland or New South Wales. You know, whether those Origin jumpers are worth more than Test jumpers. That's an age old debate that people will always have. But to have players like Jerome put his hand up and say, it's the Kiwis who I want to play for, I think is absolutely fantastic.
And I think it's good for the international game too, Graham.
Oh, it has to be, mate. Yeah. Everything's about tribalism. You've got to have tribalism, and that's one of the things that when the Origin's here in Auckland next year, you'll see tribalism taken to another level, because the only sporting organisation, in my opinion, that's shown any sign of tribalism, and they do it they do it as well, if not better, than most of the clubs in Australia, and that's the Warriors. I mean, yeah. The Warriors have delivered a tribalism that's just absolutely outstanding.
And when you go there, you know, it's not just when you go to the Warriors games. It is, you know, you ask any Aussie fans that come over. I've met a few of them in hostelries, and they've all said to me they just want to come to go media. They want to feel that experience. And when you see them the next day, they go, man, we love it. We that's something I don't believe happens in Aus and with a lot of the NRL Australian-based clubs.
No, and that's right. I mean, the Warriors, their marketing, and I think that it's, you've got to be fair to say that their CEO, Cameron George, I think, you know, has grown as a CEO, and he's without any doubt, he's the best sporting CEO in this country. That's for sure, in my opinion. And you know, the way he drives the marketing and whatnot, I think it's just, It's very, very special, and it should be an example and other sporting codes and organisations should take note of it, because there's a little bit too much kick and clap mentality here.
Absolutely, and I think you're right, and I think with Cam George, he knows when to kick butt, and he also knows when to make sure. I can tell you something from a personal note. I've actually, when you've gone to go media, when you see Cam George, the CEO, behind the post with the normal fans looking at the game, that shows to me that it's a good culture.
It's a fantastic culture, and that's what I was saying. I think Cameron George, the CEO, I know this is off the topic of Origin, but Cameron George has grown into the position of CEO that I think is an example for all sporting CEOs. He's just done a fantastic job. He's really, it's not an easy thing to do to be CEO of an NRL side, and particularly, you know, a side like the Warriors, where it's a one club one country situation. There's, you know, there's a lot of focus, and you know, that's, you've got to make sure that focus is put in the right way and directed the right way. And Cameron, I think, has done an outstanding job with that. But they, you know, they deliver a tribalism and an excitement at every single Warriors game, whether they're winning or losing. That's just fantastic. And you just imagine that gives you a sliver of an example of what the State of Origin game here, that second game, is going to be between Queensland and New South Wales.
Absolutely. Well, Lowy, thanks so much for your time. Oh, any more? So what would you say to a New South Wales guy that's walking in from town to Eden Park? Get an Uber or a hide?
No. One of the things about Origin, whether you're wearing New South Wales or Queensland, you wear it with pride. You wear it with pride, and that's the fantastic thing about it. You know, everybody is welcomed in everywhere, and if you're supporting the other team, it's a welcomeness that brings. Even though I think, and I hope to tell the truth, that Auckland becomes a second home for Queensland. The reality of it is, if you're wearing a State of Origin jersey, it doesn't matter what colour it is, you'd be welcome anywhere.
Yeah, we could probably turn Kingsland, Dominion Road area, and you'd probably like this one, Lowy, into a mini Caxton Street.
Exactly, yeah. And isn't that a savouring thought to consider?
Absolutely. Lowy, thanks so much. Have a wonderful weekend, mate. And you know, we look towards the announcement, we look towards the NRL season, and, you know, got to tell you something, really looking forward to it.
Good as gold, mate. Thank you very much for having me on.
Cheers, thanks.
That was Sir Graeme Lowy, and I have to say, great interview by old Lowy, eh? You can, the old passions here. Hey, just a bit of an update on the PGA Genesis Invitation. At the moment, Ryan Fox finishes round 2 under. He is 6 under for the tournament. He is currently only 3 shots from the lead. He's currently tied for 8th. So anyway, we'll play a bit of music, and then we will have former Black Caps coach John Bracewell as we speak a bit of cricket.
Let the clocks be reset and the pendulums held.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. And of course, before we go to our next guest, this is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomatoes happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries. And different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, we come to the second round of probably one of the longest and one of the most confusing tournaments in the world, the 2020 World Cup. New Zealand's through to the second round. Mr. Galloway is away in Wellington at an event, but we're very lucky to have join us former Black Cap and he's a player and coach, John Bracewell. G'day, John. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Amy. Yourself?
Oh, listen, mate, I cannot complain. And I have to say, obviously, this tournament, it's been very, very interesting. In many ways, I'm still trying to work out how the second round works because how they've done the groupings, because it seems as though that New Zealand, in many ways, has been drawn in has got a real possibility of at least making the semi-finals in this. Obviously, we had a bit of a scare against Canada, but it wasn't really a scare. New Zealand looked in control. Obviously a few, and obviously Lockie Ferguson and back in Auckland for the birth of his wife's baby, and of course Michael Bracewell, your nephew is out, so there's been a few reinforcements brought in. We have Pakistan on Sunday, and it's in Sri Lanka. So I'm looking at this, John, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a great opportunity because I don't know who could confuse things. Like, we don't have India, we don't have the West Indies who look in form. Obviously, we did. So we look at all the ones that have qualified, South Africa. So we've avoided them all. And we've got probably Pakistan, dangerous. England, you don't know what you're going to get. And Sri Lanka, maybe having their home advantage. Just your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think New Zealand have come out on the right side of the draw. And the reason I'd say that is because I think Sri Lanka will suit our seam bowlers a lot better and a lot more, and it'll also bring Ish Sodhi into play with the lower spinning wickets as opposed to the finger spinners that New Zealand have been using. So I think that that opportunity for Henry and Duffy to come into their own, they found it hard on the flatter tracks in India, but I think they'll find it more suited to their style in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, and I think, one of the notes I had written down, I've had a look at our batting lineup. Obviously, Tim Seifert, he's been outstanding. He's probably been him. He has really been the key batsman for the Black Caps. Finn Allen, now, there has been a lot of talk about Finn Allen that, yeah, he's good against some of the smaller nations, but he's yet to prove it against the bigger nations. This really needs to be a time for Finn Allen to stand up here.
Yeah, I mean, they are flat track players, but that's the nature of T20. They tend to, those flat track players, they get on a good wicket, they get on a bowling attack that doesn't really suit that wicket, and they tend to dominate. That historically is part of 2020 cricket. It is a bullying game. And batters, when they get in form, they tend to bully. Now, the Australian side, that's a classic bullying batting lineup that didn't come off. Found it very, very difficult in the conditions that they played in. So New Zealand batting side was on the right end of the Indian side of the draw in terms of playing in India. Suited our batters, didn't suit our bowlers. Now I think the reverse is going to happen. So we can get to 160, 180, our bowlers can start to do their thing.
Is there anything, like you're a former Black Caps coach, you've coached, you were there when 2020 first came in when you were coaching in England. Is there anything that Rob Walton needs to change or needs to change, does he need to change things up or just keep to what he's got?
Oh, no, I think in terms of his batting lineup, I like the better balance of the left-hander, right-handers that they've got. They were, during our home summer, we tended to see left-hander after left-hander, and I was a little bit concerned that we could get set up a bit with our batters, with cheap off-spinners sort of getting through some cheap overs. But I think there's a nice balance at the moment. I think Neesham probably is a little bit of a worry. One is fitness, two is consistency with bowling, and the fact that he hasn't had a bat on tour so far. So I think that, you know, Sodhi could easily slip into that position. Satner has proven that he's a genuine all-rounder now, so you don't need to stack your batting order as deep as we do. So that gives Rob Walter some bowling options going into probably the more bowler-friendly wickets that he's going to come across.
Absolutely, and of course, we did mention about Australia. Now, I know that you probably had a tear in your eye when you saw they were eliminated, John.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of the Big Bash, so I watched that, and I'm not quite sure if it's because I had some time with the Big Bash, and I really like the attitude of the Australian in terms of how they go about their cricket. They play the Big Bash to represent Australia. They don't play the Big Bash so they can get gigs overseas. Yeah. So it's very, very competitive. However, I think they picked one style of cricketer for that tournament, which was a bully cricketer, and they didn't have they have got no batters in that side that can get them out of trouble if they're in trouble. Mm. They just play one format of cricket. You know, it's how far I can hit it.
And you actually see it in their lineup, like Travis Head, you know, like any side that has Travis Head in there, and in all forms of the game, to be honest with you, John, test one day into 50 overs and 2020. It just didn't spark, and I felt they were probably, they lacked a bit in bowling this time too, John.
Yeah, it's a bit of a transition with, they've used Cumming and Hazelwood and Stark for so long, but they haven't actually ever integrated another potential bowling attack. New Zealand are very, very lucky in one, and I know we were going to talk about the domestic scene, yeah, but one in how we have presented our cricketers over the last few years. Any player that has come into the New Zealand side since the Bolt Southey exit have actually been prepared to perform. So our provincial coaches are doing a really good job in terms of presenting these guys ready for international cricket. You know, Duffy and Henry, they've sat on the sidelines for so long, and then we've got Folks, O'Rourke, they've all come in and they've immediately looked to be ready for international cricket, and they have performed at an international standard. So that's a credit to how we're going about our domestic cricket and to our domestic coaches.
And when we look at the domestic game, and I've noticed since this era, you've mentioned all these guys, Will O'Rourke, Ben Sears is one that's come through. Nathan Smith,
yeah,
Toiled away at domestic cricket, got contracts in England because the English saw he was the sort of bowler that suited their pitches. The big concern for me, and this is just me as an outsider looking in, where are we going to find this next batsman coming out of, say, domestic cricket? Like, the players are there, John.
Yeah, they are there, and anyone who's been sitting, let's go back to Ravindra. What is he, 24 now?
Yeah, he's there for a long time.
You know, they selected him, and immediately he was ready to play international cricket. Now, they've done the same thing with Robinson, came in, scored 100 against Australia. He's not even on this tour. You know, our biggest weakness of our coaches and our international coaches, and it's served us well, is our faith and our loyalty. Mm. We tend to run that right to the end. You know, we've gone back to Henry Nicol. I mean, and to be fair to Henry Nicol, he came back in, got 100 against Zimbabwe. So and he's gone back to domestic cricket and he's performed. So domestic cricket is doing something that I don't think we're appreciating well enough.
Yeah, you're right. And when we look at it, John, like for years, New Zealand domestic cricket has, you know, we've got the six major associations, but for years it's sort of like it's been sort of like maligned a bit, that New Zealand domestic cricket. But I think what we've seen that has come through domestic cricket that has come onto the international stage has actually, it's beginning to work. I want to see Reece Murray get more of a run. What about Matt Boyle from Canterbury? Some of these good young cricketers that are coming through the game.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things we have missed, and this just may be because of the turmoil that's going on inside of New Zealand cricket at the moment, but we have missed the A program over the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Where those guys, where Will Young emerged from,
as an
international batter. So, you know, those opportunities where those guys were going to India a lot, they were going to this to Africa a lot, all those sorts of things. They were certainly going to Australia a lot. They were used to foreign conditions. They were used to foreign food. They were used to foreign hotels. They were used to international flights. So all those things that tie you out as an international cricketer, they were match fit for.
Mm.
So we're producing those cricketers, but are we producing those international match fit cricketers? And I'm talking about the international touring saga, that ability to deal with an agent and the franchise world and all these buzzy things that go on around you. All smelling of roses, but, you know, really are they? So having that A program, I think, is essential to the development of New Zealand cricket. And when we had it, we were producing batters coming out of that all the time.
And
at the moment, we're producing really good bowlers, and those bowlers are performing. You know, Clark from ND came in and performed. Fisher went away with the Zimbabwe and performed. Fox has been outstanding if it swings. So the cricketers are there.
And I'd have to agree with you, and I have to agree with the point. Wouldn't it be great if we could actually, you know, with the Black Caps tour in England, maybe if there's an opportunity for a New Zealand A team to play against some of the top counties in England?
Yeah, a tour of England is a great thing. I know there was an A team that came over there when I was coaching at Gloucester. I know that the Australian side were there every second year with an A team, and that was back when Nathan Lyon was still trying to emerge. So, you know,
well, was he in his 30s,
real
John?
Value in an A tour.
I was gonna say, was Lyon's in his 30s then?
Yeah, he's about that. And his third wife, I think, anyway.
Okay. Well, I suppose on that note, we better wrap it up here. Hey, John, thanks so much for stepping in today. And if I catch up with you next time, there'll definitely be a pint of the black stuff on my account for you.
Excellent,
Aiden.
And a pack of taters.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what, I'll give you a text later on. I'll see if I can get you some taters carried over to you. Cheese and onion.
Cheers, mate.
Okay, cheers, brilliant. John. Thanks. John Bracewell, brilliant, eh? Brilliant. He's just a brilliant analyst and just a hell of a good bloke. Anyway, next up we've got Seamus Martin from Between Two Bears as we speak a bit of football.
I'm just a crosshair. I'm just a shot.
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, before we get to our next guest, okay, if you're looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market, well, this is the person you need to be speaking to. His name is Robert Thompson. He's a resident, he's residential sales at the Epsom branch of Barford and Thompson. Robert has been renowned for good results. He will give you the best intel and he will advise you your next step in either selling your property, purchasing your property, or just some advice. And he's a good bloke as well too. Robert's number is 021 737 949, or you can email him r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Well, fresh off hosting the first hour of the Hellbergs, the big guy from Between Two Bears podcast, Seamus Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Got to give a little shout out to Barford and Thompson, actually. They had a couple of seats for us at one of their tables at the Hellberg Awards, so thank you very much for your hospitality.
Now, Robert's listening, and Robert's going to say, why wasn't he be speaking to someone at Barford and Thompson's right now? He would have loved to sit next to you and then probably, you know, give me a hard time, but because he's such a good bloke, but he would have loved to be in there. And hey, good stuff the other night. Anyway, we move with round three. We're in Melbourne and we have the OFC Pro League. A couple of big games and a midweek New Zealand derby in the OFC Pro League. We start off South Island United versus Tahiti United.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? The Pro League moves to Melbourne after two series in Auckland and Port Moresby. I think South Island United should be too strong for Tahiti United in this game. I think form will be with the South Island team. But look, one of the things that's been really interesting about this Pro League is, you know, it's so even. Outside of Auckland FC, who are, you know, currently running away with it, the middle pack of the teams, perhaps barring Papua New Guinea, PNG, Hikari United, are all pretty even. So, look, Tahiti could spring a surprise here against South Island, but my spidey senses suggest that South Island United will be too strong. There will be real interest in the second game tonight.
Oh, yeah.
South Melbourne versus Auckland FC. That's one plays two. I think South Melbourne would have a little bit of pressure on them to perform in front of their, I won't say the home fans, because Lakeside Stadium is their home venue, but to perform in front of their the fans in Melbourne and wider Victoria at the home of the Matildas tonight. I think Auckland FC will be too strong for South Melbourne. The one factor I think that might swing in South Melbourne's favour, their domestic league has kicked off at the same time, so they'll be really battle-hardened. I think they've played two games already in the league since the series finished up in Port Moresby. So, look, they've had another two matches, whereas Auckland FC have been on ice, been back training here in New Zealand. So perhaps form will be in favour of the South Melbourne team. But either way, that looks like a real mouth-watering encounter, as does Tuesday's New Zealand derby, as you rightly point out, Eamon. South Island United versus Auckland. If you cast your mind back to the very first match day, that's how we kicked this competition off. Auckland FC far too strong at Eden Park. South Island United will be looking for a little bit of revenge, I'd suggest, in that game. But look, I really think it's who's going to join Auckland FC in the top four at the moment. Don't forget as well, tomorrow, Buller versus Vanuatu and Solomon Kings versus PNG Hikari. So plenty of action in the OFC Pro League to come. And those extra washed-out matches from the Auckland leg will be picked up next week as well. So, huge week of football in Australia.
Absolutely. And, of course, then just before we get to the New Zealand derby, the Phoenix Women, they snatched a 1-1 draw against Melbourne Victory. I think Beb Priestman, she would be happy just to get points there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they were disappointing against Central Coast Mariners last week in horrendous conditions in Porirua Park. What a difference a week makes. Those are some of the worst conditions I think I've seen in domestic football. And then you fast forward 5 days and they're playing in blazing hot heat in Melbourne, actually at the home of the Matildas, where the OFC Pro League will kick off tonight. So look, I think she will be really happy. 87th minute equaliser for Michaela Woods, who, you know, she's been an absolute revelation since signing on as an injury replacement. They'll be happy. They've never won in Victoria, don't forget. This is just their second draw. So they sit in second place with a game in hand against Melbourne City, who also played last night and won 3-1 against Central Coast Mariners. So they've got a 5-point lead on Wellington. But Wellington have got a game in hand. But the whole A-League women goes into hiatus for the international break. And they're not back in action until the 14th of March. So a long break for Bev Priestman's side. Perhaps, you know, just starting to eat into that momentum that they were picking up. But don't forget, the football firms will be in action. So they kick off their first steps to the World Cup qualifiers.
Absolutely.
Up in the Solomon Islands, playing Samoa, Solomon Islands, and American Samoa as well. So, look, a good point for Wellington away at Victory. And, you know, I think come back in after the international break. I think there's three matches to play. The Premiership plate is still on the line. They've got a crucial catch-up game against Melbourne City, which could decide the final resting place of that. But I'm picking they will be in finals football. I think they're far too entrenched, although the competition is still pretty even at this stage, to book their first ever appearance in the final series.
Okay, and then we move on to the New Zealand derby. Well, you know what? This derby, it's got a lot of interest. Auckland FC was able to snatch a last-moment draw against Sydney on the road, but the big thing is, it's still points, and they're still within that top two or three. But we also have a look at the Phoenix. Obviously, Sapreet Singh is out for, it looks like, 8 weeks. But I think the Phoenix have a little bit of confidence. This one is going to be the most hardest derby to call, I think, Seamus.
Yeah, I think beyond the first ever derby, this one is probably the most evenly matched. You know, before that first derby, we weren't really sure, you know, how that would play. Both teams were in pretty good form last season in round three. And this one does have an interesting feel about it, doesn't it? Auckland, if you look at the table, you'd suggest, and the recent history, you'd suggest Auckland start as odds-on favourites. 5 derby wins from 5. They're sitting second on the A-League men's ladder, 4 points behind first place, which is Newcastle Jets. And Wellington down in ninth, they're 4 points out of the top six. I think the big thing for me that might swing things in Wellington's favour is Sam Cosgrove being out. I think Auckland sometimes have struggled to find the back of the net. And I think the absence of Sam Cosgrove, that big physical presence up top, might have a little bit of a say. Certainly, the Wellington Phoenix rear guard will be happy to have the Englishman on the sidelines. But on the same token, you know, the absence of Sapreet Singh and Tim Payne, yeah, I think they're two big names on paper that are absent. But let's be honest, Sapreet's played, what, 60 minutes for Wellington? So they've had a season without Sapreet Singh. Tim Payne was injured for large parts of the early part. So I don't think the absence of those two players makes such a big difference for Giancarlo Italiano's side. Josh Oluwayemi, the goalkeeper, is back in contention, back at full fitness, whether he elects to go with the English shot stopper in goal ahead of Albert Kelly-Heald. Is one of the big question marks. I'll be really interested to see how that goes. And Ifeanyi, I thought he'd missed out through suspension, but he's okay to play today. So, look, I think recent form suggests Auckland FC, but I'm going to suggest this game finishes as a draw, Eamon. I think these two sides can't be separated. I think a little bit of emotion. I think Wellington have signed very well in the window. Bill Tuiloma is coming into his own, marshalling that rear guard. And if Oluwayemi does start and is in top form, I think Wellington could sneak away with a point here. I don't think they'll be strong enough to roll over Auckland FC, but you and I both agree Auckland FC haven't been in the same form that they were last year. So it'll be really, really interesting. All eyes in New Zealand will be 5 o'clock down at Henry Stadium, as it's now known, for that sixth instalment of the New Zealand derby.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we've got a small matter. Darren Bazley has of an all-white squad to pick. Are you picking any surprises or returns? Obviously, one I can think of is possibly Andre Geong being added to the squad from South Africa. But obviously, we know the players that will likely to be out will be Chris Wood and probably Libby Kadachi.
Well, I mean, Sapreet Singh will miss out, won't he?
Yeah, of course.
In the last quarter, you've got Marco Stamenich, Matt Garbutt, even Ryan Thomas, all under injury cloud. So this is a huge, huge, huge opportunity for some of these fringe all-whites to really put themselves into the forefront of Darren Bazley's thinking. I think Andre De Jong is a prime candidate to try and take the role of Chris Wood. I think Ben Wayne has been tried in previous windows and hasn't quite established himself. And I think Andre's a very different type of player, a little bit more mature. You know, he's able to play back to goal. He's able to link the play. I think he comes into strong contention to lead the line for these two matches coming up in March. I think there's a bit of mail on Lockie Bayliss, the player out of Newcastle Jets, and Newcastle are flying at the moment in the A-League. And Bayliss, who played for the under-23s at the Olympics, could be in line for his first ever call-up to the All Whites. And Matt Dibley-Dias over in Fulham as well. He's yet to commit to New Zealand fully, but this could be an opportunity to bring him into the squad and have a look at what he can do at international level. So, look, I actually think this is a really, this is a huge window for Darren Bazley in terms of the composition of the 26 players that make their way to the United States. And a huge, huge chance. This is exactly what you want, to see whether those players that are in the fringes can step up to the mark and can fulfill a role that he needs to play, be it starting, be it coming off the bench, or being a really positive squad member in the tour to the USA. So fascinating to see how this will pan out and who gets the nod in that squad and who comes home for those games.
Absolutely. Okay, we better start it off now, everyone. Grab your pens, grab your pencils. This is, we're doing our EPL picks, and I've got a wee surprise for you, Seamus, and I'll, but we'll start it off. We've got Aston Villa versus Leeds, Brentford versus Brighton, and Chelsea versus Burnley.
Oh, look, Aston Villa for me versus Leeds. I think Villa are a dark horse to finish in. Finish in second spot. I think Arsenal are going to run away with the title here. So I think Aston Villa might be an opportunity to, you know, to finish in second. I think they'll be too strong for Leeds. What else did we have there? Do we have Chelsea Burnley?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, Chelsea Burnley. Again, I go with the form side. Chelsea in fifth spot. I think Burnley are deep in a relegation fight. So look, I think Chelsea win that one pretty comfortably as well. And Brentford-Brighton is the other one which has caught my attention, which I think Brentford, you know, they're still in the conversation for Europe. I think they'll be too strong for Brighton. And they're a real surprise package for me this year, Brentford. I had them tipped, if you remember, right back at the start of the season or before a ball was kicked to be relegated. But up in seventh, they're still very much in that conversation.
Now we've got two games, West Ham versus Bournemouth, Manchester City versus Newcastle. Now, before I went on here, I got a message from Speedy Mulvey. He said, pick your sugar daddy's team this week. So, now those who are new listeners, we call AFC, our sugar daddy Bill Foley AFC Bournemouth, as we call him. But so, yeah. So, we will let you get to this right now.
Oh, look, I am going to tip Bournemouth to win that game. I think West Ham are odds on for me to be relegated. They are only 3 points ahead. Behind, I should say, of Nottingham Forest in 17th. But look, I think AFC Bournemouth have been, again, another one of those teams that don't seem to be dropping off in form for more than 2 weeks. So I think Speedy, I have tipped the Cherries. I have tipped Bournemouth to beat West Ham. I know a lot of West Ham fans aren't going to like that. I seem to tip against them every time in the hopes that maybe they will step up to the mark. But it just doesn't seem to be going their way this season. And I think Man City will be too strong for Newcastle at home. I think that game finishes a win to Manchester City pretty comfortably against a Newcastle side that haven't reached the same heights that they did last season.
Okay, so we got these three games on Monday: Crystal Palace versus Wolverhampton Wanderers, Sunderland versus Fulham, and a bit of a North London derby: Spurs versus Arsenal.
Well, look, Sunderland have been one of the top sides at home. They had their first defeat at the hands of Liverpool in the last round of matches before the FA Cup. So I'm tipping Sunderland to beat Fulham at home in that game. Crystal Palace will inflict more pain on Wolves, in my opinion. So Crystal Palace win that one. And the North London derby, for me, goes in favour of Arsenal. I think Spurs are in real disarray. They could even be a relegation chance this season. Arsenal are going to run away with the title, I think, and they'll take great glee in taking 3 points away from the London Stadium over their rivals. The other game, Liverpool versus Forest. Look, it's impossible for me to tip against my Liverpool team when Chris Wood isn't playing for Nottingham Forest, and we know he still isn't. So I think Liverpool win that game against Forest. And the other Merseyside action against your mob coming up, who have surprised me up into eighth place. And I think I said this to you the last time we spoke.
This is a banana skin game for Manchester United. It always has been, historically.
Correct. And the fact that Everton are even still in the conversation up in eighth place speaks again, I think, to the level that the Premier League is at this year, where teams that aren't necessarily at their very best are still very much in the conversation. So, look, I do think that's a banana skin. I haven't tipped any draws in the EPL this week, but I am going to tip that one to finish as a draw, Everton versus Man United, honours shared, 1 point each.
And this is proudly brought to you by your local hardware store, sitting on the fence for a long time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, that last match here, you probably, you know what, I'd probably be looking at that, but it's an interesting week, and no doubt people will remind us of how we go. I will get the weekly text from one of the sponsors saying you're 4 out of 10. I've got a feeling this week we're going to be at least 6 out of 9, 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 this week.
Oh, look, I'd love for 1 week just to be above 50%. I think that'd be nice to get a pass mark for once.
I have to say, really enjoyed yours and Steve's input at the Halbergs. I felt it was great.
Oh, look, thank you. It's a wonderful night to be involved in. Not only is it a celebration of sporting excellence in New Zealand, the work that the Halberg Foundation do.
Absolutely.
To kids that are less fortunate with physical disabilities, to get them involved in sport and give them opportunities that they might not otherwise get is absolutely phenomenal. So if you do get the opportunity to put your support behind the Halberg Foundation, please, please, please do so, because they do wonderful things in the community.
Thank you very much, Seamus. Have a great weekend, mate.
Cheers. Enjoy the football.
I will indeed. Seamus Martin, brilliant as always. Okay, we go across the ditch to Gordon Bray.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
We all know that music, and we all know it. This time every month, once a month, we have this chat, and from across the ditch, the Australian View, from Australian broadcasting legend, an absolute gentleman of a man, Gordon Bray. Good morning to you, Gordon.
Lovely to be with you, Eamon. Yes, I'm sitting up on the central coast of New South Wales, looking out at the ocean at the moment. There's not a breath of wind here, and we're looking at about 32 degrees. So,
oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
I'm on grandparenting duties down at the beach.
Oh, okay. So you've just told him granddad's friend from New Zealand's calling up, and he's got to talk a bit of sports. Well, we might as well rip into it, because it's quite a bit. When I wrote my notes to you yesterday, I was thinking, God, we've got a bit to get through. First of all, we're going to go to cricket. Now, I hate doing this, but Australia's out of the 2020 World Cup. What has been the reaction in Australia about this?
Well, I guess a lot of cricket fans saw this coming. You've got to say it's a bit of a train wreck. In Australia's defence, they've been hit pretty hard by injuries, you know, to frontline bowlers. The skipper having that groin injury before the first game didn't help. But all in all, a very disappointing performance by Australia in the T20. I'm not sure how much of an audience the T20 gets this World Cup. Certainly the Big Bash is very popular, but I must admit I haven't watched any of the games. I'll watch the highlights. But, yeah, it certainly is a huge disappointment. And Australians, you know, losing to Sri Lanka and Zimbabwe, that's three World Cups now where Australia has failed to go on with the job. And as a nation that prides itself on our cricket, we are certainly right up there at the summit as far as the red ball is concerned. But after what looked to be a pretty good preparation last year with T20 with this team, they've fallen well short, I've got to say.
Yeah, doesn't it? Does it seem to be like I just had former Black Caps coach John Bracewell on, and John's an admirer of Australian cricket because he was been involved with the Big Bash and a coach and advisory role. But he just said it seems as though they just picked one type of player. They didn't the selectors didn't find a player that they could they couldn't vary the way they were playing at 2020.
Look, I think the other problem is that I'm not convinced they pick players on form. I mean, how on earth could you leave Steve Smith out of a T20 squad?
Well, I know.
In the Big Bash, he wasn't picked in the squad, and then they flew him over there. But I think he arrived after the match against Zimbabwe as a cover for the top order, but obviously wasn't required. So, yeah, you've got to say these players are reasonably well established. But are they in form and are they performing? And you've got to say a lot of them haven't been performing this year. Sadly, I think it's probably the end of the road for Glenn Maxwell. He's been a fabulous competitor, but he just hasn't come to grips with it this year. And it was the capitulation, really, of the Australian batting after a very good opening stand with Head and Marsh putting on over 100. You'd think they could go on with it from there. But again, Australia, I guess, in the end, hold it under pressure.
Absolutely. And, of course, we had some big news here in Auckland. I was looking at the Herald website, going into the city to do my normal 9-to-5 job, or the place I work at, because somebody says I don't work. But all of a sudden, I saw this man with a big buffet coming out and explaining that State of Origin 2 is coming to Auckland, New Zealand in 2027. I'm going to tell you something, Gordon. The reaction in the Auckland area has been absolutely positive. I know the mayor is absolutely delighted that they got this across the line. I know that speaking of former Queensland and former Manly coach Sir Graham Lowe, he is really looking forward to it. A lot of rugby league fans in New Zealand are looking forward to this. What has been the reaction in the Australian media? Sending the State of O, that great series to New Zealand.
Well, I think there's been a little bit of amusement amongst the non-rugby league spectators, but I think it's fabulous news, really, as far as I'm concerned, because finally an Australian team's going to win at Eden Park. I thought you'd enjoy that.
Oh, brilliant.
But look, I've got to say, if I was promoting the State of Origin, I'd be looking to take a bit of the spotlight away from the Rugby World Cup next year, and this is a perfect opportunity. And State of Origin is all about the hype, you know, the build-up to the game. It goes on for literally for months beforehand, you know, state versus state. And although they've changed a lot of the eligibility this year, I don't have a problem with that, really. They've still got to basically have come from that state or resided in that state before they were 13 years of age, or their father had played for one of those two states. So they're the basic criteria. But look, you're not going to have 55,000 that you'd get at Suncorp or 80,000 you'd get at the Olympic Stadium. If it is Eden Park, I think you're only about 40,000, so...
40, I think they'll probably get the capacity up to close to 50 on this one.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, well, that's respectable then, if you can get 50,000. But no, I think as far as rugby league is concerned, it's a very good move, and Auckland has always been the headquarters of rugby league in New Zealand, and I think that the Warriors, having been very consistent in the last few seasons, they've built their audience. Rugby league has taken a lot of. I see there are a lot of young players, rugby union players, here in Australia, and even in New Zealand, who come up through the private school system, who've been poached. The very good rugby union players have been poached by rugby league, and that's got to be a concern. So this is a win-win, I think, for rugby league.
I think it is a win-win, and, you know, like, obviously there is, you know, speaking to people, like, those tickets are going to be, like, absolute hotcakes to get, and, you know, if you're fortunate enough to get a ticket, I think, you know, in the old days before online, you'd have people lining up to get their tickets for the match, and with the Australian contingent coming over, and as I just said, you know, speaking to a lot of people about this, the good thing is, you know, like, we'll have the CRL running in the city, so it means people from the downtown of Auckland can get to Eden Park within 10 minutes. And I think it's just having that atmosphere. I did mention to Sir Graham Lowe that I did want to support the Blues because my friend Gordon Bray's from New South Wales. But as he just said, I made a comment, like, the areas like Kingsland, Dominion Road, so close to Eden Park, you know, I said, imagine that being like because New Zealanders will support Queensland, there'll be most of the majority areas. You could have a mini Caxton Street in those areas.
Yeah, well, you're going to get, I would imagine, at least 10,000 Aussie supporters coming across for the game.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a huge positive, and it's going to be a very much a 3 or 4 day experience. And if they are really sensible about it, there are some wonderful attractions in New Zealand, some of the great golf courses. It's an opportunity to make an extended trip. And I think you'll see a lot of travel groups looking to have special itineraries taking in other sporting attractions where people can get involved. So, yeah, no, I think it's very positive. I remember when they first moved the Bledisloe Cup to the MCG in Melbourne, there were black jerseys all over the CBD of Melbourne. I think the crowd was up over 80,000 people, and it was a massive boost. So in that sense, it's a sugar hit. Whether it's going to be a medium to long term thing, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly in the short term, I think it's a big plus for rugby league.
Absolutely. Well, we've been watching a few of the Super Rugby. I'll be honest with you, I know we're only in second round. Last week, I don't know, I was thinking about putting rugby and taking the Super out, because some of the games, especially in New Zealand, were like the Auckland, like the Blues Chiefs game was a very, very hard watch. But, well, you know, last week I saw not a bad crowd for New South Wales in their first game, the Waratahs. The crowd seemed to be in Sydney seem to be okay. We've obviously got a big game in Perth with the Blues visiting, and of course the Brumbies are coming over to Christchurch.
Well, I think it's as I've stated many times, for Australian rugby to be doing well, they need the Waratahs, New South Wales, to be performing well. Probably they need them to be the top team, because it is the major growth centre, it's the major population centre for rugby in Australia, and then you want Queensland right up there as well. But New South Wales have certainly started this season in promising style, and they really rebuilt their team. A lot of players have come through the system, and I can honestly say that we now in New South Wales have genuine depth across the whole squad, and that has really shown out in the first two games. Very early days. Jorgensen's been on fire.
He's brilliant. He's
been
a
freak. The player of the tournament. He's been doing some magical things. I have to say that was a poor decision by the officialdom to rule that a forward pass just before halftime. There's a lot of controversy about these forward passes, and I just think the officials are getting it wrong. If the ball leaves the hands and doesn't, is not thrown forward towards the opponent's dead ball line, then it's not a forward pass. And last night, the tap on, at worst, it was flat. But for that try to be pulled back against the Fijian Drua, I thought it was a terrible decision. And we've seen it in the Six Nations as well, where genuine tries have been scored. I mean, poor old Italy in their match. I think Lina scored a great try, which would have put Italy in front and given them a great shape last weekend. But again, a forward pass was ruled. So I really think there needs to be some closer inspection of this so-called forward pass rule, because some really great tries have just been thrown into the garbage tin.
Absolutely. Just one thing that's caught my mind. I had somebody calling me up, and a mate of mine, and he just said the prices of World Cup tickets. Now, it seems as though, like, I haven't been on it, but I've looked at it. Category 1, for some of the big games, like some of the All Blacks versus the Wallabies, some of the games like Scotland versus Ireland, $635 for Category 1.
Now, is that Aussie or
Australian? Australian.
Yeah, well, that's pretty scary, isn't it? It's $1,900 for Category 1 for the World Cup final. So who's going to pay that sort of money unless you're a corporate?
Well, that's it. That's it.
It certainly knocks out families. They're priding themselves on the fact that World Rugby that they can the tickets start at $40 for adults and $20 for kids in some of the pool games, and then it increases from there. I think over 1 million tickets have been made available in the first batch, and look, all of these games are going to be sold out. I do feel Australia's been cheated by World Rugby in making the opening game of the World Cup in Perth between Hong Kong and the Wallabies. I mean, what on earth is going on there?
Well, you know the Wallabies aren't going to lose that one.
Well, you would hope not. They're playing basically an amateur team.
Yeah.
And, they're called Hong Kong China, but I'm scratching my head. And so are all rugby fans over here, that is the showpiece opening game of the World Cup next year. When you think back to 2003, I was over there, and it was England and South Africa. England were the favourites for the tournament, and it was an absolute blockbuster. So this feels a bit like, a bit like Australia playing Oman in the opening game. It's a big disappointment for me. But what's happened, World Rugby has changed the model. So in the past, the host nation has been able to share in the spoils. 2003 World Cup, Australia came out with a money box of over $50 million. It was squandered by administration after that, but they came out with a lovely profit. And what's happening this time is all the profits going to World Rugby, and they'll allocate a fixed sum. Maybe it's $70 to $90 million to Australia. So that's a guaranteed sum. But it means that Australia misses out on potentially a lot more money, because that goes to World Rugby, who in turn will then distribute that, hopefully, across their whole family.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to finish off. Australia are doing very well at this Winter Olympics. Now, I've got to ask you, as a former Olympic broadcaster, how are you finding this freestyle skiing and the snowboarding? Are you down with the kids on this one, Gordon?
Yeah, no, my little grandchildren are quite in attracted by it. I've got to say, we've won three gold medals now. Chikara Anthony, Cooper Woods. That was in the men's moguls. That was an absolute shock, because before the Olympics started, he was 100-1. So he's come through that qualifying stage. And I guess our most favoured man there was Matt Graham, who's in his mid-30s, a protege of Cooper Woods, taught him everything he knows, and he came good finally in the dual moguls to get a bronze medal. So Australia's won three gold, two silver, and also a bronze. And it really was lovely to see Jakara Anthony, who was the defending champion in the women's moguls, come through and get the double moguls gold medal after missing her dunk. There've been some close shaves for the Aussies. Scotty James was in the gold medal position and Jeff didn't quite land his last jump. But I think it all comes down to our Winter Olympics base. 15 years ago, the Australian Olympic movement with the AIS, the Australian Institute of Sport, built a complex in Gavarate, which is in northern Italy, and it's basically a home away from home. It's a replication of the AIS environment in Canberra. It's been there for 15 years. all of the Australian athletes were able to gather there before the games, and when the games are finished, they'll all go back there to join forces and be part of the bonding, because the Winter Olympics is very spread out. So it's been a brilliant innovation by Australia, and it certainly has paid dividends. And it's fully equipped like the Australian Institute of Sport. And it's in northern Italy, Gavarate, and they've been adopted, the Australians, by the locals. And it certainly has paid some very handsome dividends.
Well, thank you so much for making yourself available. We will catch up next month, and then in March, and then in April, we will be, hopefully, if you're around, we will be talking on Anzac Day.
Lovely, Eamon. Yes, I'm off to the Rockville.
Okay, take care, Gordon. Thank you so much. Cheers. Gordon Bray, fantastic. Okay, next up, myself and Lee Piper are going to speak about some of the sporting stories of the week.
Just go ahead now. One has diamonds in his pockets, and that's a rip now. This one said he wants to buy you rockets, ain't in his head now. Hey. Prince new racket, that's what I said now. Got some mixy love on his jacket, ain't in his head now. You marry him, your father will condone you. How about that now? You marry me, your father will disown you. He'll eat his head now. Marry him, or marry me. I'm the one that left him, baby, can't you see? I ain't got no future or family tree, but I don't want a prince and have a heart to be. I don't want a prince and have a heart to be. Said if you won't you call me baby, just go ahead now. And if you like to tell me maybe, just go ahead now. And if you wanna buy me flowers, just go ahead now. And if you like to talk for hours, just go ahead now.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend, and we come to the final part of the show. There's just a two-man panel. You know, I've been rather busy, so the only one who makes himself available, he makes himself available every week because he threatens legal action if he's not on the show. Please welcome the mouth of the South, Lee Piper. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very, very good. Well, we might as well rip into it. Obviously, we're going to start rugby. It's going to be a big night down in Dunedin for the Highlanders versus the Chiefs. But there's still this talk about the All Black coaching job. I've heard rumours from some of my sources that a crew of the acting CEO, Steve Lancaster, and Dane Coles were shadowing Jamie Joseph. Then on Sunday, they're off to Japan to shadow the other candidate, Dave Rennie. Now, there's so much BS that goes on social media saying, oh, it's going to be announced in the next 2 weeks. I don't know what you've heard, Lee, but I'm hearing it won't be until mid to late March.
Well, your source is very good there, because that's exactly what's happening. And that talk last week of the announcement coming out this week, which is, you know, Monday to Friday, which is just gone, was nonsense. And you're right, Coles and Lancaster were with Jamie Joseph ahead of the Crusaders game last week. They then headed off to Japan, and they've shadowed him. I understand that there's interviews to be done. They haven't even done that yet. Decision mid-March, ratified by the board at the end, but I think you're 3 weeks away from having an announcement. What'll be interesting, I think, also, Eamon, is that when and if they get to that point, whether they go, it's Jamie Joseph alongside Scott McLeod, Kenny Lynn, Ryan, and someone else, or whether they go, it's Jamie Joseph and he's going to, you know, choose. Because traditionally that's what's happened. Scott Robertson's the coach, and then he goes and chooses who he wants with him. So that'll be interesting. And given the length of time that they've taken, that might be a possibility where they start to look and think, okay, well, what, who are you bringing with you. And a few names have been, you know, bandied around from both camps.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the interesting part of it. Look, you can view it two ways. You can view it, which we all did. We all viewed that Scott Robertson is out, Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown are in. It's really just going through the motions, and that's going to be done and dusted in 2 weeks and away we go. That's clearly that wasn't what was going to happen. And so I think a couple of interesting things off that, Amon. One is they were obviously so disappointed with Robertson and Razor that they just were like, he's gone.
Yeah.
Now, normally, as we've talked about on this show, mate, normally what would happen is you're gone and this person's taking over and, you know, I'm not doing that. And a little bit like the Ian Foster thing. Foster's out, Robertson's in, because that's what they were proposing. But in this case, they've clearly gone, it's so bad, he just has to go no matter what. And they made that call, and then they started the process. So, to be fair to Kirk, he was true to his word. We've got rid of the coach, and now we're going through a thorough process. And I know for a fact that the New Zealand Rugby Union, and in particular Kirk, was very, very disappointed with the way that Scott Robertson was appointed. And he alluded to that in the press conference. We're not going to go down that track of basically appointing. And that was really on the previous CEO and Mark Robinson. And that's disappointing in that regard as well. So, yes, I'm not surprised that we've ended up where we ended up once the initial play of we're not just appointing someone. I'm not surprised the process has taken so long. I would even go so far as to say I'd be prefer for it to take longer to get it, A, get it right, and B, have those assistants and those specialist coaches also locked into play. And we're also very transparent with the New Zealand rugby public, and everybody knows what's going on.
Well, you would just mention a few names, like if Jamie gets to pick, obviously Scott McLeod has been banned there, and Kenny Lynn, I think, involved with Argentina, Jason Ryan, probably David Kidwell as well, too. There was a reason he was brought over. But then I heard our old mate Lashes on Sports Nation saying the names of for Dave Rennie's team, Neil Barnes, Andrew Strawbridge, and a guy, and Mike Blair, who coaches with Dave Rennie in Japan. So it's interesting to a point, but the big thing is that it probably needs to they've got to get it right, because if they don't, that board, if it fails, and it fails miserably, they're gone. Absolutely gone. And there's no way of stopping this. Hey, just some interesting facts, and I'll get on to, before I get on to State of Origin. Now, as a former board member of Netball New Zealand, Matt Winneray has stepped down. A couple of board members have decided to step down. What was your reaction to this? And they came out, they made statements about, you know, how much they've done. And, you know, my statement was, and I have to be careful what I say, but I felt like saying, hang on, you are the board that couldn't control a coaching situation. You are the board that has been unable to secure a TV contract for our national netball competition. What has been some of the thoughts of the reaction of some of these board members stepping down?
Well, you're correct, I think, in your assumption. What was funny in the press release was they said it's been a challenging 12 months. Well, that's because you've made it challenging. Like, it's been the decisions that you have made. It's the lack of control that you have had that has put netball in the position that it is. I mean, you're directly responsible between the chair and the CEO. I've said this before, Amon, that relationship is 100% key. If that's not gelling, then you've got a problem. And that's why when Kirk came in, the writing was already on the wall for Mark Robertson. Just got to go. And so that's why the appointment, I think, will take some time there as well, because Kirk will want to get his guy or girl that he can relate to. That part is absolute sacrament. You cannot get that part wrong. So that's a tick, and we're getting that right. So Winneray was and is linked completely with Jen Wiley. So the moment she went, he really had to go as well. The other board members, and I think I've talked about this with you before, the way that the Netball New Zealand board operates is slightly different, in that you, of the board of seven, you have four that are appointed. So they go through an interview process like a job, and three that are elected. Now, in most sport governing boards at that level, you often see the opposite, which is that the elected members control. So effectively, the members, in this case, Netball New Zealand members, so their zones, if you like, would control the board makeup. That's not the case in Netball. four are appointed. Now, interestingly, the four that are pulled out are all their appointed members. So all of those that got appointed via that process are now gone. So the elected members via the zones, if you like, have remained. So what will really bring my blood to boil will be if you see these people popping up in other roles. Now, this is one of the great cover-ups of New Zealand sport. You see Mark Robinson headed to some cushy role in world rugby. I could name others within sports organisations within New Zealand that have just lurched from one disaster to another. And I shake my head, particularly in sports I'm involved with, where I go, that person is a completely incompetent board member, CEO, chief commercial officer, and somehow the sport goes, well, actually, we've got to shift them sideways. So they get rid of them, and then the next minute, they pop up somewhere else.
Teflon.
Like, how does this happen?
There's some people that are Teflon.
Completely. And so I think that's something we've not investigated. It's very closed shop. It's kind of jobs for the girls or the boys, and it circles around in the same kind of circle. So I'd love to see a bit of a wild card come in here with Neville. They've got a really good opportunity to go, how do we redefine where we are at? And where they've got massive problems is their commercial model is, in my view, flawed. They have, as of right, thought, well, we are the premier women's sport, therefore, well, we're just the premier women's sport. Well, no, yes, you might be, but there are challenges across a multitude now of other sports that are also coming up to that same level as netball. And again, we've chatted about this a bit, Eamon, that the way that sport is broadcast now, or our ability to view sport, is such that we get opened to all of these sports, you know, and the Winter Olympics is a good example, as is the Olympics, of being exposed to new sports, the ability to stream a sport. We saw that with basketball. They did an amazing job of lifting the profile of their sport via streaming apps and via streaming sites. We're seeing rugby now wanting to head down the same view, where rugby clubs are thinking maybe we stream more of our content. So netball, as of right, doesn't have that position anymore. So one, their commercial model is flawed. That needs a massive overhaul. Two, they're completely disconnected and disengaged with their members and their zones. That needs fixed, and fixed quickly. Three, their competition is in massive strife, so they need to fix that. And four, they need to absolutely look at what the Australians are doing, and they need to build a stronger relationship with England and Australia in particular, and go, how do we create something that is now more palatable to the general public? If they don't address those issues, they're going to go, the new board and the new CEO will go down exactly the same trick, and it'll even be worse than it is now.
You're a former board member there, Lee, and I'm not going to put you on the spot, but surely has anyone from, you know, and I know what the answer is going to be, probably no one from New Zealand Netball has sought out your advice. I think they should. And it's not because I'm trying to get a free lunch out of you, Piper, because I know how tight you are, but I would just say, like, you know, would you, if someone from New Zealand Netball came up and asked for your advice, you'd give it freely. And I know you would.
Obviously, yes. And I have talked to some people over the last kind of few months. A few people have reached out, and pretty much what I talk to you about is what I talk to them about. But as I say, it's really whether those conversations are being had. What I do know, and this is not specific to netball, is that in a lot of situations, those conversations get shut down because this sounds harsh. It's jobs for the boys, and I'm not saying that with netball. I'm not saying that's where they're going here. But often in these, there is a circle, and if you're not in that inner circle, you're kind of not in. And what I'd love them to do in netball in this particular case is look outside that circle. Start thinking, if I was on that board, I would be saying to them, let's go, what does radical to an extreme look like? What does that appointment look like, you know? And then kind of work backwards from there. It's like if you're going for a concert, you might go, well, I'm going to get Lady Gaga or Taylor Swift. Those are the two top concerts, I think, in the world right now. You might end up with Nana Mouskouri, but at least start with Lady Gaga and kind of work your way backwards. And I think that's what netball's got to try and do. They've got to start with, what does perfection and extreme look like for us? And what are those options? And then kind of work your way backwards. Not start at where they are now. I think that would be a mistake. I think they've got a future look at their sport and say, where do we want to be in 3 years? Where do we see ourselves in 5 years? What does a world championship of netball look like, as in a club competition? You know, like, look at all of those options and then build your kind of base around that to say, okay, well, what would happen if we had a Super Series with Australia? Top two teams from New Zealand, top two teams from Australia, and the top two teams out of England. What would that Super Six series look like? Because the start of the New Zealand season is the end of the British season, if you like. So there is some scope to do that, and that's what I think they should, that's just one example of the things that I think they should do.
Anyway, we move on. Now, State of Origin, it was announced, the man with the big hair, I don't know what his name was, but he had a huge bit of hair. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, Eden Park, Auckland turned on the weather, announced that Game 2 in 2027 of State of Origin is coming to Eden Park, it's coming to Auckland now. In Auckland, we are absolutely buzzing. The reality is, there's going to be a lot of people miss out on tickets because you've got to give a certain amount to Australia. But the big thing is that it's great here. From your neck of the woods, do people really care what's happening up in Auckland?
Look, I think it was a really good thing from a New Zealand perspective in that you could look at it and say, look, what I really like about the government in this particular role is they have seen what events and what major events can do to cities, and they've seen what it can do to a country. So I'm all for it, and I think it's a bit of an out-of-the-box thinking. There's been a bit of criticism, but I'm for it in the fact that it's bringing events, particularly to our biggest city, and you're given the opportunity to go. I think it'll be a success, and I'm all in favour of anything that's bringing an economic impact into a city. You know, I'm obviously in my role at in Dunedin with the stadium down here, that's just an absolute tick for me. What they've got to try and what I would be looking at is how do we bring people from outside of Auckland in, and to your point, outside of the country, because that's how you have an economic benefit. There's no point in swirling around a local economy and saying, well, the game raised, I don't know, $10 million for the local Auckland economy, but of that, $8 million was really just, instead of going to the Warriors or going out for dinner, I went that. That's not driving the economic impact. So I like what they're doing. I'm a big fan of bringing major sporting events and major concerts and major events to New Zealand. I think that's a great thing, and it's a great area to head down. It's not, the State of Orange is not exactly my cup of tea. I don't know if I think I would go for the occasion, and I think many people will. I think the occasion, particularly that first one, will be huge. And that'll be amazing to be at that event. But I don't shout for either team. I've got no particular affiliation. And so when I go and watch my sports teams, I go to the Highlanders tonight, I'll definitely know which team I'll be shouting for. And that's the joy of sport. So I think if you're a State of Origin fan, like maybe like yourself, and you're a Queenslander or a Maroon or a New South Wales fan, then I think it's going to be amazing. But if you're apart from that, I think, you know, and what will also be interesting, Amal, is whether they continue to do it. Do they see it as a one-off? Or do they see it as something that they're bringing every 3 years? Look, how does that go? Because I don't think it's got like a life. I would do it every year.
Listen, this is what I'm hearing, and I'm hoping to speak to some people next week, but I'm hearing that it may be, if it goes well, it could be a once in every 4 years opportunity, which is great because it gives you 4 years to prepare, etc. But the biggest thing is Gordon Brayer, who I've just had on from Australia before you, he's actually excited. He said, finally an Australian team wins at Eden Park.
Yeah, and he'd be right. Yeah, but I think he's right. And if you're correct, and I'm not saying you are or not, I'm just saying that would make more sense to me. That, you know, you do it once in every 4 years, and so you're not trying to do it every year and bleed it every year, because I think that would be a mistake.
Absolutely. Hey, just quickly, Ryan Fox and Lydia Ko going well on their respective tours, the Genesis Invitational. Foxy is 6 under for the tournament. He's 5 behind the lead, but he's tied for 8th. Lydia Ko's doing well in Thailand. She's about equal third. You know, I have to say that them two are great representatives for golf for New Zealand.
Oh, they're brilliant, mate. And you and I debated this, obviously, last year around the health.
Don't mention Alicia Andrews, okay? We've gone. We've moved on, Lee. We've moved on.
I know you have. But it's the same this, you know, like it's the same this week. I mean, Hamish Kerr was amazing. But when you look at, say, Chris Wood, and you go, he was the leading scorer in the biggest premier sport in the world, in terms of football, the arguably the best competition, and he didn't win it. I just shake my head. I'm not taking anything away from Kerr, but it's the same with Fox, you know? He's competing with Rory McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, like Scheffler rather, but those guys are at the top of their game, and Fox is mixing it up with them, and Coe's just in a world of her own in terms of, and we don't, I think we glance at them, but I don't think Fox has been given the credit, and I've said this before, and I was at Lashes when we talked about it. I think what he's achieved is phenomenal. And, you know, he on his day, he's as good as anybody else. And, yeah, I watched a bit of that game, a bit of that round yesterday. And I think he ended up the day tied for third. But he can be up and down, Foxy. It's just the way that he plays and it's the style that he's got. But, yeah, no, fantastic effort from the both of them.
Yeah, and I think with Foxy now, I remember speaking just before he won that first tournament, speaking to his father, Grant, who we sort of know who he is. But, you know, it was just getting that confidence boosting winner on the PGA, and I think for what we're going to see out of Foxy is consistency, but hopefully he can, you know, maybe one day we could have that breakthrough of, say, Foxy winning a major.
Well, I think the problem with Foxy is, and we've seen this a lot with him, he can be on fire, he could shoot 8 under and then the next day shoot 8 over.
Yeah,
it's that consistency that's hard, and that's what separates good from great in these competitions, is that, you know, a McIlroy might put together, well, particularly Scotty, he could put together four rounds easy that are, you know, under the card. And that's been Foxy's problem. He can be in contention and then struggling to make the cut. And so, you know, he's been more consistent in recent times. And, God, no bigger fan than him. There is, but probably his father. But I've got a lot of time for him. I think he's an amazing ambassador for New Zealand. He's a humble guy. He's, you know, if you can get hold of him, he's only ever too willing to talk. He's not too big and full of himself. I think both him and Coe are amazing ambassadors for New Zealand.
On that note, Mr. Piper, I hope you enjoy the game tonight, and I hope you'll probably be in a corporate box somewhere.
I definitely will.
Yeah, you just say it with a battery and a knife. Anyway, mate, have a good weekend, Lee. Thanks for making yourself available. We will catch up in the next few weeks, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers. And that's us done.